So the question is that sometimes when, say, a devotee is coming to Krishna, at that time, some senior devotees being very insensitively, at that time, then they become, that creates a scar. And later on, that impedes one's progress in one's bhakti. One may even extrapolate that negativity from that devotee towards Krishna also. And then it may interrupt one's, affect one's progress in bhakti. So what can we do? Yeah, it's very distressing when this happens. Firstly, all of us have to go through different challenges when we come to Krishna Bhakti. Those challenges may be by our nature, our background, our some past karma, and even the particular kind of association that we find ourselves in. So there is a circumstantial element in bhakti, and there is a transcendental element. Transcendentally, when we try to approach Krishna, from the transcendental perspective, when we try to approach Krishna, everything that is happening is ultimately a part of Krishna's plan. So, that if we focus only on the circumstantial, for example, oh, this devotee did like this, that person did like that, they did like that, and that created so much problems for me, then that focus only on circumstantial means that we are not really perceiving Krishna's hand over there. That is, our Krishna consciousness is right now quite limited. So as devotees, after we start practicing bhakti, at least we need to recognize that the circumstantial and the transcendental. So we, sometimes the circumstantial may be favorable, sometimes the circumstantial may be unfavorable. And as a principle of surrender, we accept the favorable, we reject the unfavorable. But our vision has to be in the transcendental. And this is also somehow a plan of Krishna to purify me and to help me come closer to Him. How exactly that is so, that we will not be able to immediately understand. So it is not that everything that happens in Krishna's moment is necessarily going to be favorable for us. To give a somewhat materialistic example, people, if suppose there is a stock exchange, where people come to invest money. So now people's hope in coming to the stock exchange is that by investing their money, they can increase their money. And the stock exchange, there are expert brokers who can help one to make one's money grow. But sometimes in a stock exchange, people may lose money also. At the same time, if people want to grow their money in a particular system, they have to come to the stock exchange. So, the Krishna consciousness movement is like a stock exchange for our faith. We come here in the association of devotees, and here there are devotees who have much more faith than us. They have practiced the process, they know how to increase one's faith, the process to follow. But, if in the association of devotees, sometimes there may be some investor in the stock exchange is not made to cheat people or to defraud people. But there also that sort of elements can come in. There may be some people who may be actually there are malicious intention, but there may be some stockbrokers who may not have malicious intention, but they may just be incompetent. So just because we have come to a stock exchange, that doesn't mean our money is no longer our responsibility or our money is going to automatically grow. Similarly, just because we have to come to Krishna conscious movement does not mean that our faith is automatically going to grow. Or that now I come to the devotee association, that means my faith, protecting or nourishing my faith is no longer my responsibility. No, it is still always our responsibility. So there are devotees who can, if they are under some senior devotees who are not very sensitive, who are not very competent, or sometimes there may be because the Krishna conscious movement is an open movement, anybody can come in. And sometimes there may be people who may not be very spiritually interested at all. And it may happen that our faith may get damaged. So we have to recognize that, you know, it is always our responsibility to advance in bhakti. So if we, as soon as we realize, okay, this is going unfavorable, this is hurting my faith, this is damaging me. See, different devotees come from different backgrounds and they may be inspired by different things. We don't have to judge the other devotees. But if we just associate with anyone and everyone, even within devotees. Sometimes we find that behavior is not very inspiring. In fact, we find that this is how a devotee behaves. We feel actually sometimes shocked by the kind of way people behave. Now, why they are behaving like that may be a whole different history. They may be having some problem in their own life, whatever it is. But the point is that anubhuti sa sankalpa sa vajana, that has to apply even in our interaction with devotees. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that some devotees, some people are practicing bhakti, but they are not well behaved. Then we can offer them respect from a distance, and we can focus on practicing our bhakti and associating with those who are properly behaved. So that's the principle of taking responsibility for our faith. And within that, if the circumstances are unfavorable, we turn away from them and go towards some other circumstances. At the same time, whatever has happened, it is a part of overall Krishna's plan by which we come closer to Him. And in some cases, it may be that by our going through that experience, Prabhupada talks about in the Krishna book, that sometimes a person has been poor and after that person becomes wealthy. Then a person is conscious about wealth and also a person is more charitably inclined because that person knows the pinch of poverty. So similarly, maybe it is a part of Krishna's plan that after we are burned by someone's insensitive behavior, we learn to become more sensitive and then we help others also to become more sensitive. Sometimes going through those problems firsthand prepares us to do a service which we might not have been prepared to do otherwise. And that way, Krishna, as I said, that Krishna can draw straight even through a crooked line. Some line may seem to be crooked to us, but Krishna can eventually make a straight pattern through it. So that's how, if we say fix the service to Krishna, whatever negative has happened, Krishna will bring out some positive through it in the long run. At the same time, this is not to justify the wrong behavior. And if, say, those devotees are still acting in that way, then we can report to authorities. And if they take some action, that's well and good. If they not, then that's, we have done our part. So we don't hold it against those devotees. But at the same time, if there's insensitive behavior, we should do what we can to correct it within our circle of influence, whatever it is. And beyond that, it is the process of entering the process of bhakti is like entering a purificatory fire. So there is some amount of, if somebody has gone through those situations right in the early days, that also indicates that one is really serious about bhakti. Because that could very well have become an excuse for giving up bhakti. So if in spite of the insensitive behavior one is not giving that up, then that indicates one's seriousness and Krishna will be pleased by that seriousness. Despite all those difficulties, one is persevered in bhakti. And as far as extrapolating that to Krishna is concerned, you have to know that actually, it is not that everybody who is in Krishna's movement is necessarily representing Krishna. In a sense, they are representing Krishna because they are devotees. But they may not be representing Krishna properly. And that's why we need to not just look only from certain examples of devotees towards Krishna. But if we have to understand Krishna's qualities and what Krishna is like, then we have to look primarily at those devotees who inspire us. You know, in the 8th-10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna first says, Aham sarvasya prabhu mattah sarvam pravartate. In 10.8 he says that everything comes from me. But then in 10.41 he states that yadya vibhuti matsattvam srimad urjitam evava tatta deva gacchattvam mama tejomsha sambhava. He says that all attractive things get their attractiveness from me. Now, if everything is coming from Krishna, then isn't it understood that everything attractive is also coming from Krishna and that attractiveness is also coming from Krishna? Why does Krishna need to tell this specifically? Separately again. The point is, it's everything comes from Krishna, but in this world, there are certain things that attract us. And it's not that everything attracts us. It's like earlier I said that a diamond ring had fallen down. Now, you know, if some stone pebble had fallen down, you would not have noted it. So there are so many things here, but there are certain things which are attractive. So the attractive thing naturally catches our attention. And we try to connect. Krishna gives us a guideline that their attractiveness comes from Krishna. That means whatever is attracting us, we focus on that and recognize this attractiveness is coming from Krishna. So if we find that certain devotees are behaving in a way that is not that is actually repelling us. And we should know that this is coming not from Krishna, but it is coming from their conditionings. Whereas Krishna is manifesting through those devotees who have attractive qualities. So even sadhakas, we also represent Krishna to some extent, but we also manifest our own conditions to a large extent also. So if we focus on the conditioning of others, and we think that that is representing Krishna, that's misunderstanding. That is not representing Krishna. So it is those devotees who have attractive qualities, and those attractive qualities attract us. You know, this is the manifestation of Krishna's attractiveness, and they are representing Krishna properly. And that's why to have inspiring devotees and to associate with them whatever is practical, and extrapolating from them or inferring from them or how attractive Krishna must be, that is the way we can protect and increase our attraction. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My last question is another question came to mind at the end of the last discussion was today. I was wondering, I wanted to ask the question that prompted the discussion about you were saying about taking guidance from seeing gurus and things like that. About taking guidance. So I was wondering, sometimes as well, when people come, like new devotees or even people just coming, we can be taking guidance just as like a, you know, wanting to take guidance because we're trying to be sincere and things like that. But then later we might realize that we weren't so interested in taking the guidance, or we decide that we wanted to do other things anyway. Or we see like if a new devotee is calm and taking guidance from someone senior and decides not to do that anyway. So how does that, I'm just wondering, is it offensive, or how does that devotee continue then if they still want to do Krishna consciousness, but they decided not to take the guidance from, you know, the senior devotees or people that they were seeking it from in the first place?
Okay. So if I understand the question, it is that sometimes some visiting devotees come or some devotees inspire us and we seek guidance from them. But later on, for whatever reasons, we no longer feel the need for their guidance and we don't follow their guidance. So asking guidance and not following them afterwards, is that offensive? Or what should we do in such a situation? Should we seek guidance or not seek guidance at all? There are different situations. See, one is, say if some senior devotee comes and they give classes, and in the class we ask them philosophical questions and we get some answers. So in this case, that is not necessarily an instruction specifically for us. But we are personally asking guidance. Is that what you are saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are personally asking someone for guidance. Usually, the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple is a formal and serious relationship. Apart from that, we can have many shiksha gurus. And the relationship with shiksha gurus is also important, but it is not as formal. We may have a counselor or a mentor, and we should also respect them, but that relationship is not as formal or as irrevocable, you could say, as the relationship with the spiritual master. So, usually, it is if we seek guidance, it is important that we either follow or we at least have some communication by which we explain why we are not in the position to follow or why we think this is not really applicable for us right now. So it's, I wouldn't go into the zone of offensiveness over here, but it's just not proper human relationships, proper emotional relationships. If we ask someone for guidance and then don't do it. So I'm assuming here that they are not in an authority position for us. They don't have immediate authority for us. But we are just ask guidance from them. This is my situation. Then, if we are not having a regular mentoring relationship with them, then it may happen that our circumstances may change or some other parameters come up in our life which make us feel like this is not a practical course of action. So if we are having an ongoing relationship with them, then we can always, at least we should clarify and explain. This was the reason why I didn't do this. Or otherwise, instead of making it a specific personal guidance, we just ask for principles. So, broadly, it shouldn't be that the devotee feels that the devotee should not end up feeling that we are simply wasting their time. So, it is not that every time we meet some senior devotees, they are going to give us instructions which we have to follow as our life and soul. It's not like that. But if we are asking specific guidance and if we are not able to follow, then it's best to communicate. And overall, it is we shouldn't worry too much about offenses. Offenses can definitely happen in a relationship, but the more focus should be on maintaining normal human communication. It's normally that if you're going to ask somebody some help, and then if they offer and then you don't take the help, we should tell them this is what has happened. But whether it's offensive, it's not a usually offense happens when we intentionally do something to pull down a devotee. We are either envious or disrespectful, and you want to pull down some devotee, and that's why we speak something about the negative or something like that. But in the normal course of functioning in the world, if we do something which displeases or hurts a devotee, that is not necessarily, that is not so much an offense as it is basically a human interaction which has gone wrong and needs to be corrected. Now, Krishna doesn't hold, because while living in the world, it's impossible to please everyone. There are some people who will get displeased, and we don't have to worry too much about that. But we can clarify if required, especially if a specific sort of guidance, and giving a brief clarification is good. Does it address the question?
And what about in relation to the spiritual master?
In relationship with the spiritual master, it is good to, whenever we get an opportunity to meet later, we can explain the situation briefly. It's because the spiritual masters also may relate to different devotees in different ways. If they know someone very well personally, and they are directly doing a personal interest in their life, it's a matter of great fortune. But still, the spiritual master may not be always available. And sometimes the spiritual masters may tell us something, and we find after some time that, okay, this I cannot follow. We have that example of Narada Muni and Dhruva Maharaj. So Narada Muni tells Dhruva Maharaj, you are just a child. Why are you taking this insult so seriously? Just go back to the kingdom and things will be alright. So at that time, Dhruva, I think there's no way there. But he clarifies, he says, yes, what you're saying is true. Actually, Dhruva, Narada Muni tries to catch him both ways. Narada Muni first says, you know, if you're a child, then you shouldn't take this as children, don't take this so seriously. If you're a grown-up person, and if you're spiritually wise, spiritually advanced people also, they don't take insults seriously. So therefore, go back to them. And Dhruva Maharaj humbly but firmly says, what you're saying is true, but I cannot apply it. He says, I have been unbearably scarred by the dealings of my father and stepmother. So please guide me in a way that I can, as a working instruction. So humbly clarifying and telling that we are not in a position to follow material instruction. There is precedent for that in Shastra also. But there should be, Prabhupada writes in the purport that we may postpone following the instruction of the spiritual master, but we should never neglect or reject it. So for example, Pakistan's Thakur told Prabhupada that preach in the Western world. Now Prabhupada could not do it for almost 43 years. But Prabhupada said, I was always meditating. Prabhupada was trying various ways. He was trying to sponsor the spiritual master's mission or do other things. So he never rejected or neglected. But there will be circumstances because of which you will not be able to follow a particular instruction. So it was not that Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur also not like a watchdog every time Prabhupada made, are you preaching in the West or not? Are you preaching in the West? Are you preaching in the West? No. He also understood that he's a grihastha and he has his things to do. And whenever they would meet, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was very cordial with Srila Prabhupada. He was very affectionate towards him. So we may not be able to follow instruction immediately. And that the spiritual master usually understands. And depending on the nature of our relationship, how much we interact, how much clarification we need to give, we can adjust accordingly. Okay? Thank you.
This is just following the discussion we had about surrender. Often when we've heard lectures on surrender, we've also heard surrender and there was the same compounds in Shimana spoken together. Could you also say a few words on that verse and how, because it's a very elevated, it seems like a very elevated state of consciousness to have. So could you also say maybe some practical ways?
Yeah. So surrender is often talked in the context of Brahma's prayer to Krishna. Whatever is happening, tattena kampam susumikshamam. This is your words. Atma kutam vipav. My own karma is coming, which you have minimized. Therefore, I offer my obeisances to you. So, This is definitely very elevated consciousness. And broadly speaking, there are various attitudes which you can have when problems come down. If a problem is coming, we may at one level think, is Krishna really exist? Does Krishna really care? Why is this problem coming in my life? Some people may go in the negative extreme and say, is God causing this problem in my life? But we need to know, it's not that God is somewhere up there uncaring, nor is it that He is sending the problem. It is, problems come to us for various reasons, which may ultimately be related to our past karma. But the point is, Krishna is in here with us, and He's here to help us deal with the problem. So it's very difficult, it's almost impossible, to see the problem itself as Krishna's mercy. And to expect to do that itself is unrealistic for most of us. Now, even when Srila Prabhupada was sick in his final days, if you read that, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, the final days, the final pastimes book, the Tikiji is there. There, at one time, Srila Prabhupada asks, why is this happening? You know, it's a natural human reaction, and that should not be, we cannot, when we have problems, Prabhupada had actually a very prolonged illness, and it just, no medical treatment was working for quite some time. And Prabhupada was trying his best. So, that is that normal human reaction when there is trouble, it should not be seen as a lack of faith or anything like that. Even Arjuna is broken down when Abhimanyu is killed. So, firstly, to try to see the problem itself as Krishna's mercy, that is very difficult. So, but what we can see is that Krishna's mercy can help us deal with the problem. It is not, the problem is Krishna's mercy. Tattenu kampam susamikshama. This is your mercy, O Lord. What is the mercy? That atmakutam vibhagam. This problem has come because of my own bad deeds, but by your mercy, I am going to deal with it. When we say that Krishna's mercy minimizes the problem, that can work in various ways. Sometimes the problem itself might have been very big, but by Krishna's mercy, the problem has become less. But another point is that sometimes our own attitude determines the size of the problem. You know, life determines our problems, but we determine their size. That means when we think too much about a problem, we are always conscious of the problem. This problem is there, this problem is there. When that problem eats us up, and that becomes bigger and bigger and bigger for us. So, at that time, what is Krishna's mercy? The problem comes for whatever reason, but Krishna's mercy enables us to deal with the problem. So, whenever problems come, somehow the problems come with a mental glue. And like if you have a glue, it just sticks to something. So, like that, problems come with a glue where they stick to the mind. Even if we intellectually understand, thinking about this problem is not helping me. But still, we just not able to think about anything else. Why did they do like this? Why did this happen? Why? And that when the problem gets attached to our mind, that eats us up, that takes away all our energy, and we feel extremely burdened and crushed. But if we at that time have an alternative object of thought, that itself releases us temporarily at least from the crushing burden of the problem. And at the very least, Krishna can act as an alternative object of thought. So if, and especially if you practice bhakti, you practice say japa, practice kirtan, practice doing study shastra, practice doing deity worship, whatever, then it will be not so difficult for us to absorb ourselves in Krishna. And just that, even the temporary release from thinking about the problem, that itself can give us a lot of our mental energy back. And then afterwards, if by connecting with Krishna we are calmed down, we will be able to see the problem with greater maturity. Then we can deal with the problem. So, Krishna's mercy is that He gives us the resources to deal with the problem. So, if I have a terrible disease, if I get a painful disease, you know, to think that the disease is Krishna's mercy is unrealistic. But I can think that, you know, if I have this disease, and if I am not a devotee, I just think, you know, crying, whatever. But here, the devotee is in the middle of Christ, Krishna begs out, calls out to Krishna. And in that, there is not just purification, we are remembering Krishna, but also there is a relief, because we are remembering Krishna. So, Krishna's mercy is that the problem comes, but the magnitude, the sharpness of the problem, the intensity of the problem becomes much lesser because we have Krishna in our lives. Yeah, and we can ourselves, if we compare, say 10 years ago, 15 years ago, before we became a devotee, and now, if a similar problem has come in our life, how we would have dealt with it earlier and how we deal with it now. We'll find that our capacity to deal with problems becomes much better. So, there, this way, by recognizing Krishna's mercy in terms of our capacity to deal with the problems, Krishna helps us to deal with the problems, we can feel grateful not for the problem, but for the fact that we have Krishna in our life. That Krishna is there in my life, and by that, I am able to deal with the problem. So, Rudva Kapur Vir Vidadam Namaste. Like with my heart, with my mind, with my body, I offer obeisances to Krishna. With my words, I offer obeisances. So it is not that I am offering obeisances to Krishna for sending me the problem, but I am offering obeisances to Krishna for being present with me in my life to help me deal with the problem. And the point is, Jiveta Yo Mukti Pade Sadhatma. What this means is that the problems can become justification for us to give up our bhakti. But if amid the problems, still we stay connected with Krishna, still we stay grateful to Krishna, not for the problem, but for His presence in our life, even amidst the problem, then that shows the seriousness of our devotion. Krishna becomes pleased by that. So if we stay connected with Krishna, even amidst problems, then that shows that we are not just, as they say, fair weather devotees. You know, when things are nice, I practice bhakti. When things are difficult, I need other things too. Now then, when Krishna sees that, through thick and thin we are with Him, we are connected with Him, then Krishna becomes pleased with Him. We are solidifying our relationship with Him, and then those who live like this, they will attain Krishna. So, this verse, how is it connected with surrender? Surrender essentially means that we connect with Krishna. Arjuna, for him, fighting was the way he connected with Krishna. So, here, when the problem is there, and at that time, we cultivate a disposition by which we can stay connected with Krishna. Now, a lot of spiritual advancement in bhakti depends on devotional reinterpretation of reality. Devotional reinterpretation of reality. That means certain things have happened in life. Parikshit Maharaj was cursed. And it was actually it was an outrageously excessive curse. His transgression was very tiny. He just put a dead snake garland, around a snake. It was an offense, but it was a minor offense. And the result for that he got was to die in 70s. And what was Parikshit Maharaj's response? He says, the Supreme Lord has come to me so that I can become free from attachments. I was attached to life, and Krishna has come in my life to free me from attachments. So what is this? This is devotional reinterpretation of reality. The reality was that he was unfairly cursed. But he is interpreting it in such a way that this is Krishna come to help me come closer to Him. Prabhupada worked so hard to operate a business and the whole business collapsed. What did Prabhupada say? Yasya vaham granami harishita krishna. Prabhupada later said that I was trying to earn money for Krishna's sake, but Krishna wanted me to preach that. And Krishna forced me to do that. So situations will come in our life, but when we say anukulya santaka pratikulya valjana, I talk at one level about accepting things which are favorable and rejecting things which are unfavorable. But it also applies at an inner level where we accept the perspective of the situation that is favorable and reject the perspective that is unfavorable. So when Parikshit Maharaj was cursed, he could have taken the perspective, I have throughout my life practiced bhakti, and this is what God gives me. Where is God? God doesn't exist. So that would be a perspective which is unfavorable to bhakti. But he took the perspective that is favorable to bhakti. What is that? Yes, now Krishna, I have been serving Krishna, but I have been serving, my consciousness is caught in so many worldly affairs also, in my service to Krishna. But now, Krishna wants me to serve Him wholeheartedly. And that is actually that devotional reinterpretation of reality is is an art, and you cannot learn it immediately. We often need to associate with senior devotees, and by the association, we can get the insights. So there is a very famous example that when Bhaktivedanta Maharaj met Srila Prabhupada. So Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, he was African American, black complexion. Everybody else in the movement at that time was fair complexion. And on top of that, most of the devotees were college dropouts. And Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was a Princeton graduate. So the remaining devotees didn't know how to deal with him. So they would normally look down upon blacks. That was the normal white attitude. Although it was changing, it was there. But still, this was a black, and he was so much more educated. They just didn't know. And there was a lot of discrimination against him. So he felt that when he came to Prabhupada, he told Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, you are not the body of the soul, but there is racism in your movement. And what did Prabhupada did not deny that. Prabhupada did not justify that. Prabhupada told him, no, they are acting out of the bodily misconception of life. If you respond in the same bodily misconception, how are you better than them? So Prabhupada told him, Prabhupada did not deny the reality, but Prabhupada gave him a different perspective. Told him, rise to spiritual consciousness. And Bhaktivedanta Maharaj writes that he felt so vindicated. He said, Prabhupada loves me and Prabhupada cares for me. Prabhupada, even if that devotee is not accepting me, Prabhupada accepts me. And Prabhupada wants me to apply his teachings, apply the teachings in my life. That same situation where there's bodily discrimination, by Prabhupada's guidance, he was able to reinterpret that as an opportunity to rise above bodily consciousness. And thus he became enthused. And later on, when the devotees saw it, he was so enthusiastic, so practicing bhakti so enthusiastically, so dedicated to Prabhupada. Then they also stopped looking at the bodily complexion. And they started regarding, respecting him for the wonderful devotee that he was. Does that answer your question? Thank you. So, I think I've answered this question. There was this question. Yesterday I mentioned that sometimes we may shake an apple tree and a mango may fall. So what does this mean practically? And how can we see this in our own lives? Yeah. Maybe I'll speak from my life first so that I can explain. So I was attracted to Krishna consciousness because Krishna consciousness answered my questions. The first devotee that I met, he came to my room for a program. The program was from 8 to 9, from 7:30 to 8:30. And after that, from 8:30 to 2:30 in the morning, I was asking him questions. So, question answer attracted me to Krishna. But then, after I started practicing bhakti, after I became a brahmachari, then I was asking a lot of questions to everyone. And some devotees started labeling me as a gyani. Too intellectual. So, then, and now, there are some devotees, when I would travel in India and I would preach, I would find that there are some devotees who would appreciate my class. But others, they would just put off. One devotee told me, your class means, ek ghante ka dimag ka kasrat karna. 1 hour you have to do intellectual hard work. So, now I felt that this is the way I can serve Krishna. But still, I was also noticing that there were devotees who were not so appreciative of it. There are quite a few number of devotees like that. So then I was traveling and preaching. I did that for almost 10-15 years. And then I was hoping that, I knew that there are devotees who are interested in, who are intellectually oriented, who need this kind of presentation. I had to search and ask many, many senior devotees for answers to my questions. So I felt that if the devotees had questions like this, if they could be answered, they would be enlivened in their bhakti. But I had no idea how I could do this. So I was praying to Krishna and I was hoping that some way it could work out, but nothing seemed to be working out. So in 2011, once I had gone to Jew temple for some programs. And in the morning japa, I was just chanting very intensely. And suddenly there's a water head spilled over there. So I just fell on that water. And I was like, my whole leg, it was fractured very badly. It was the same leg which I had polio, it was fractured very badly. And then immediately I was rushed to the hospital and the operation was done. And then the doctor told me, you cannot travel anymore. At least the way you are traveling early, you cannot travel.
I was so miserable. I felt,
If I don't travel, how will I reach? But then, I was connected with some devotees. So, I in the hospital, I was there for 1.5-2 months. So, I was giving some classes on Skype to some devotees. So, once I was giving a class to some devotees in Bangalore, and I was speaking about the opulences of Lord Chaitanya. And 6 opulences of Lord Chaitanya. And I just lifted my eyes and continued speaking. And then suddenly the internet connection went off. And I didn't realize it. And somehow they also called back, but they couldn't connect. So I was speaking for 15 minutes. And nothing, there was nobody there. But I didn't realize because my eyes were closed. And after 15 minutes, my phone rang. So those devotees finally tried to call from phone. And then my first reaction, I wasted 15 minutes. But then the next moment, it struck me that actually when I was speaking about Krishna, I was happy. I was absorbed in Krishna. So it struck me that for speaking about Krishna, I don't need an audience. So that gave me the idea that I knew that there are many questions which people have and I need answers. So at that time I thought that I can start a question answer forum on my website. And that's how I started the question answer forum. So then I started, and there are many devotees in different parts of the world who are nourished by the questions. And I also feel nourished because people ask thoughtful questions. You know, people are not just, even if you ask a question answer, sometimes people ask the basic questions, you know, how can I improve my chanting? How can I become more humble? These are all good questions. They're standard questions. There are many deeper questions also which people don't ask. So from this question answer forum, I am myself nourished and I feel that I will serve the devotee community also. Now almost more than 3,000 questions are answered for them. So it all began in a way, I was praying to Krishna that give me some forum, but I got a fracture instead. But through it all, Krishna worked it out. So, if we just, Yudhishthira Maharaj is told by Vyasadeva that the inscrutable will of the Lord is surely for the good of all human beings. The inscrutable will of the Lord is surely for the good of all living beings. If you do His will, you will realize it in due course of time. Since Krishna's will is inscrutable, so how exactly He works, we can't understand. But with faith, we understand that it is for the good of everyone. And how it is good, that you may not understand immediately. If you do His will, you will understand it in due course of time. So if we, there is, in our life, there is our desire, our intention, our action. That's in our control. And the circumstances that we are in, the problems that we are facing, the solutions that we get, all this, those are not really in our control. But if we keep doing our part consistently, Krishna will work in His own way. And He will provide us opportunities for serving Him. In a way that is inspiring for us, that is beneficial for the devotee community. So it's like we don't know in advance what the mango is going to be. But what we do know is that Krishna is always our well-wisher. And if we can maintain that faith, then wherever the opportunity comes, Krishna, we will get the intelligence. This is what I should do. So, quite often, as devotees, there are two aspects. That one is, we try to do our service well. Whatever services we have existing, we try to do it well. But another aspect is, that we are also looking. What are the things which I could be doing? See, just like, the Amrit Maharaj once gave this example to me. I love it example. He says, that suppose you are working in a company. You are doing the job which your boss tells you to. But at the same time, you are also thinking how you can grow in your career. Now, maybe I can learn this skill also. Maybe I can learn this application also. Maybe I can learn this particular job also. So, when we are working in a company, at that time, we understand that my growth in my career is my responsibility. It is not that just I do whatever the boss tells me to do, that is enough. That we have to do. But along with that, we are also proactive in thinking how we can grow in our career. Similarly, as devotees, we should always be thinking how I can become a better instrument for Krishna's service. We do what we are told to do, but at the same time, our senior devotees, our spiritual master, they may not be knowing so much about us. So we may have certain talents which they may not know about. So we should be observing our talent. That means just as we take it as our, in our career, we take it as our responsibility to grow, to become more multifaceted, to become, have more knowledge, and to become a better performer in our academic life. Similarly, in our spiritual life, we should be thinking how I can become a better instrument for Krishna, how I can become a better servant for Krishna. Better servant for Krishna doesn't just mean becoming more surrendered to whatever instructions we get. It also can mean finding out ourselves how we can serve. So we look at our talents and we look at what opportunities for serving are there. And we find that some other opportunity for serving which is more suited according to our talents, then we try to develop as an accordingly. It's not that we have to, it's when we are working in a company, it's not that we don't do what the boss is telling us to do. But we don't limit ourselves if we want to really grow in the career. We don't limit ourselves to only what the boss is telling us to do. We also take responsibility for our growth. So like that, if we take responsibility for our growth, then we will find a way by which we can move on. So it's, bhakti is about following instructions, but there is a standing instruction that we are meant to practice bhakti lifelong. Prabhupada, we have practiced bhakti lifelong to go back to Krishna. And our spiritual master, our spiritual guide, they're not going to be there by our side lifelong and tell us, do this, don't do this. So, one part of following the instruction of Srila Prabhupada, or following the instruction of our spiritual master, is also finding out how we can practice bhakti lifelong. So if we can find a service which we will feel inspired to do lifelong, then that is a very important way in which we are following our spiritual master's basic standing instructions. So that means taking inventory, understanding our talents, understanding what opportunities are there, and finding a service accordingly. So when we, as I said, we don't know what the mangoes are, but we do know what we are weak. If we explore, we can come to know what we are good at, or what we can do well, or what we like to do, whichever you want to put it. And we try to create forums for doing that. So basically, if we made that resolve that I want to practice bhakti lifelong. And if I have to practice bhakti lifelong, what all do I need to do for that? So we get the inspiration from senior devotees, but also if we can find something which inspires us. So for example, preaching is a service. Now, if we can become a preacher, wherever we go in the world, there are always people to be preached to. So we will have a lifelong service. Similarly, there are other services also which you can do lifelong. So the point is not just following instruction, the point is becoming a lifelong servant of Krishna. And that means we should be able to keep practicing bhakti even when we don't have any specific instruction. There's a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, Ishan Prabhu. Last year I was in Alachua. Alachua is like a community of retired devotees, retired Prabhupada disciples. They're living in the retreat over there. So I met him over there. So he tells one story in Prabhupada memories. When he was in London, at that time, Prabhupada was asking all the devotees, London was the West European headquarters. So what is happening in France? How is the preaching in Germany? How is the preaching in England? They're all asking. So Ishan Prabhu came to Prabhupada and he asked him, Prabhupada, everyone has something to do for you. What can I do for you? So Prabhupada said, please give me something to do for you. Prabhupada said, what do you want to do for me? So, no Prabhupada, whatever you tell me, no, what do you want to do for me? He said, I don't know. I never thought like this. What should I do for me? Prabhupada said, understand our philosophy. Our philosophy means to find out what we want to do and to do it for Krishna. Then he went and he thought. And then Shadow he liked to do some work with clay and shaping things. So he said, Prabhupada, we get these mudangas from India. Those mudangas, they often get spoiled. They crack and they break. So I'm thinking I can use synthetic material from here or material available locally, and I can make mudangas which won't break so easily. So Prabhupada smiled. He said, yes, your god brothers are very passionate. So make mudangas, make such mudangas that even if they throw it down, they will not break. So from that instruction, he got a whole lifetime of service. And he did that service, making various, not just mudangas, various other things he made with clay, and got a whole service for Krishna. So it's Bhakti is about following instructions, but bhakti is also about following the instruction to stay lifelong in the service of Krishna. And that means finding out how we can serve Krishna. So, in that context, you know, looking for a Vishika apple tree, that means we have a specific problem and we look for a specific solution. But we can do that and we should do that. But along with that, we also consider that, okay, how can I serve lifelong? And that when we find, that's like the mango falling in our life. And that's how we can be open to Krishna's plan, and whichever way he comes, we'll be able to receive that plan. Thank you. Can you elaborate Srila Prabhupada's mood? Okay. While he was going through all the adversities that you mentioned in the lecture. Yes, and Srila Prabhupada faced difficulties. Prabhupada did not exactly keep a journal by which we can know what his mood was. But the nearest to a journal that we have is his prayer, Markini Bhagavata Dharma. He saw the vast empire. At that time, he wrote a song in Bengali, which is called Preaching the Bhagavad Dharma, Markini Bhagavad Dharma. And in that song, if you conceptualize what is Srila Prabhupada doing, if you consider preaching like a spiritual war against ignorance, not a physical war, but a spiritual war against ignorance. Then Prabhupada was like a lone warrior going into a land which was filled with materialism, and he was about to launch a spiritual mission in a land which was completely materialistic. So normally, if a warrior is going to a war, then the warrior knows the most important position of the warrior is his weapon, is their weapons, because that's what is going to enable them to win. So just as if somebody is going to a place where there's gun shooting going on, the police person is going, and the police will repeatedly check, do I have my gun, is it loaded or not, they'll keep checking. Naturally their thoughts will go to their weapon. Now, similarly, when Prabhupada is facing the imposing skyline of the American coastland, at that time when he is thinking, he's revealing to us what was the weapon that he was going to use to fight that war. And what is Srila Prabhupada's mood? There he quotes several verses from the Bhagavatam, and he essentially says that Bhagavatir katha seta bhagavatar dhirahaya shune jadi kane barabar. So he says Bhagavatir katha, and the hearing of the Bhagavatam is saying tab avatar, Krishna, you, that is the incarnation of you. And dhiraya, one will become sober of shune barabar. If one just hears that, hears Bhagavatam again and again, one becomes sober. And Prabhupada is not thinking that I am going to by my intellect, convince all of them and make them to devotees. Now Prabhupada, his vision is so deeply spiritual. He doesn't see the prosperous American coastline. He doesn't think, oh, these people are so wealthy, so progressive. He's saying, Rajastamo Gunera Sabai Achana Vasudeva Katha Uche Nahise Prasanna. He says, all these people are covered by the modes of passion and ignorance. And that's why they are not able to understand Vasudevata. So it's amazing. Prabhupada is not thinking, I am an Indian, they are American, I am speaking Bhagavad Gita, how will they understand Bhagavad Gita? Prabhupada is seeing from the spiritual perspective. The obstacle is not that they are Americans or they have never heard about Krishna. The obstacle to their understanding Krishna is the mode of passion and ignorance. And therefore, Prabhupada knows, if you read his, he kept a diary, some diary is kept there. He's also aware, when initially when he talks, he knows that people are able to understand his pronunciation. But he, sometimes when Indians go abroad, you know, they try to learn American pronunciation so that they can pronounce properly. Prabhupada is not praying to Krishna, Krishna, please English, please improve my English pronunciation. He says, Alankruta Koribara Kamata Tumar. He says, please ornament my katha. And what is that ornament he wants? It is not some improved pronunciation. Like ornamentation, he says, Krishna, you are present in their heart. Tomara ichchaye sabha hoy maya vash. Tomara ichchaye nash mayara parash. He's saying, Krishna, it is under your supreme will that these people have gone into illusion. And by your supreme will, they can come out of illusion. So if you so desire, please make my words understandable. And then Prabhupada concludes his prayer not by saying that let me establish a worldwide preaching mission, let me give me thousands of followers, give me hundreds of temples. Prabhupada says, actually, he concludes by saying, Nachate Nachao Nachao Prabhu Nachao Simate Kashthera Puttali Jata Nachao Simate. Please make me dance, Lord. However you want, make me dance, just like a puppet. In fact, the Prabhupada begins by saying that, says, Aniyache Kecho Ayugrasthi. He said, why have you brought me here to this terrible place? Which Indian, after going to America, will say this is a terrible place? Right? So, by seeing your spiritual vision, he's thinking so far away from Krishna, filled with so much more of passion, he's thinking it's not a very good place. But he's saying, Krishna, why have you brought me here? You must be having some plan. Anuman. It's interesting, we say Anuman, is, we should not speculate. But Prabhupada is saying, hey, Anuman, I infer, I guess that you must have brought me for some purpose. And whatever is your purpose, you make me dance accordingly. So Prabhupada's mood was, whatever obstacles he was facing, we can infer from this song, is that he saw himself as a servant of Krishna. And whatever situation was he was in, he was seeing it from the Shastra Chakshu. And he was saying, okay, how can I serve Krishna? So it was not like when Prabhupada went to America, he had a complete blueprint, everything clear. I'll go here, I'll do this, I'll go there, I'll do that. No. The Prabhupada kept taking whatever opportunity he got, he kept using that opportunity. And sometimes that opportunity led to a dead end. And sometimes, toward the later part of the life, that opportunity led to a glorious expansion. So Prabhupada's mood primarily was that, please make me dance, please Krishna, engage me in your service the way you want me to be engaged. So that's why when Prabhupada was asked, what is the best prayer to Krishna, he said, give me the strength to serve you. So if we have that mood, then whatever obstacles come, we can face those obstacles. We can, because when we have a desire to enjoy, enjoyment depends on many conditions. And those conditions are not there, we can't enjoy. But if you have a desire to serve, service can be done in any condition. Of course, if you want to do service in a particular way, you may not be able to do it. But if you want to serve itself, service can be done in any condition. So Prabhupada's mood was, please give me engagement in your service. Please make me dance. So with that mood, it's of course a very exalted mood, but in our own small way, if we internalize that mood, then whatever obstacles come, we can also weather those obstacles and emerge stronger from them. So, you mentioned that in Yudhavikalpa, sometimes our enthusiasm goes down and we lament too much and we keep from following the rules of bhakti. So, can you tell some practical ways in which how we can come out of that stage when our enthusiasm has gone terribly down? Yes, at the bottom of the sin wave and have no enthusiasm to come back. Yeah. This can happen, and when this happens, it is, they say in the army, the more you sweat in peace, the less you will bleed in war. The more you sweat in peace, that means you practice vigorously how to fight, how to train yourself, you keep yourself fit, then the less you will bleed in war. Because then even if the enemy attacks, your reflexes will be strong and you will be able to avoid. So when our consciousness is overall okay, not be like you're dancing happily in bhakti, but it's overall okay. That time you should try to practice bhakti as seriously as possible. That is like we are practicing where in peace, we sweat at that time. So when life is not all that difficult, at that time we become very lax in bhakti. Then when life becomes difficult, it will be difficult to hold on to Krishna at that time. So when life is overall okay, at that time we practice holding on to Krishna more tightly. And then we can hold on even when there are difficulties. So that's the first thing, because we cannot predict or control what emotions our mind will come up with in future. But what we can control is how we are acting right now. So if we try to be as serious in bhakti as possible right now, then that is the best preparation. Then by that we show Krishna that I want to be serious in my bhakti. And if we find out something deepen for ourselves, as I discussed earlier, something that stimulates spiritual emotion within us and keep them with us as much as possible. Then as some picture of deity, some nice music, some songs, some memories, which we have preserved them, then we can draw on them to move onwards and to pull ourselves out of that trough of consciousness which we have sunk into. And along with that, if this sine wave of going up and down, it is a strong problem that we have. One of the best ways to overcome that is to take up responsibility in bhakti. Because one thing is doing some surveys and another is taking up responsibility. Doing surveys means, okay, you're told to do this, do that, told to do that, we do that. That is good. But when we take up responsibility, at that time, we are forced to put aside our mind. That is the nature of responsibility. How is that? Just like, say when a mother has a child, at that time, because of natural affection that is there, the mother takes up the responsibility of the child. In the middle of the night, when the child starts crying, the mother may not feel like waking up. But she wakes up and she cares for the child. Why? Because that is the nature of responsibility. When we take up responsibility for something, at that time, although the mind may not agree to it, but still you put aside the mind and do what it is, what it takes. So, if we take up responsibility in Krishna's service, then that forces us to do certain things. So, that responsibility may be in various things. Like, just as we have a commitment, we chant every day. We take a vow. Why is that? That's one level of responsibility. So, whatever service we are doing, if we take up responsibility in it. Now, one of my main services is writing. And in writing, a major problem is called as writer's block. Writer's block means, sit down to write and you get no ideas to write. So, one writer says that you sit in front of a computer and glare at the computer till blood forms on your forehead. So you just get so much tension, not able to write anything. So, one of the ways in which writers work around a writer's block is that they make a commitment that no matter what happens, I am going to write a certain number of words a day. Maybe even Nobel laureate authors, they also, they may be great in their writing, but that does not mean that their mind is mind of a pure devotee. Their mind is still conditioned and they also go through their words. So the Nobel laureate authors also, many of them, they had a commitment. Every day they would write something like 2,000 words, 3,000 words, whatever, depending on one's own situation. Whether you feel like it or don't feel like it, just do that. So when they do that, what happens is that commitment. Every day I write. Sometimes the writing comes out good, sometimes the writing doesn't come out good. That is not important. Just do the writing. And by that, so one author says that the rules actually free you to be you. Normally these rules restrict us. But author naturally wants to write, but sometimes you just don't feel like writing. But if there's a rule, I have to write. Then gradually, as you keep writing, that boredom, that apathy, all that gets pushed aside. And then, there are two ways. Now we can feel our way to our actions. Or we can act our way to our feelings. We can feel our way to our actions means, that means we feel like we're doing something and then we do it. Yeah, I feel inspired to go to the temple. I feel inspired to do something. So we feel our way to actions. We feel like doing something and we do it. But that is not the only way we do any serious activity. If we are in a job, I don't feel like working today. We will never say that. Why? Because it's a very serious responsibility for us. So in serious activity, we don't just feel our way to actions. We also act our way to feelings. Act our way to feelings means, I don't feel like doing something, but still I do it. And by doing it, gradually that feeling comes. So, when Giriraj Maharaj was in Juhu project, at that time there were a lot of difficulties. And then they were trying to get the land and the legal clearances. And they just not able to get anything through. But these are young Americans, they had not even much experience with American bureaucracy. And now they had to deal with Indian bureaucracy. They had thought we are going to be with Prabhupada, they are going to be in India, and it's so wonderful. And this is so terrible for them. They would just go to this office, go to that office, sit for 1 hour, sit for 2 hours. So disheartened. And evening they would come back, they would be there for Gaurati. And Prabhupada came back, and they would be so demoralized, they don't feel anything. So Prabhupada told them, Gaurati, why don't you dance in Jesus?
oh, nothing is working out. There's nothing to feel happy about. We're so gloomy. How can we dance? Because if dance, you'll feel happy about
it. So, it's not that necessarily that when we feel happy, we dance. Rather, we dance by that itself. Happiness will also come. So, if we are deep down in the dumps, just come out and do something. And then another time that happened, the devotees were very much down in the dumps and nothing was moving forward. Prabhupada told, we'll have a big pandal program. The devotees said, how can we do the pandal program? Nothing, we don't have any resources. Prabhupada said, no. If you're too caught in management and legalities, well, that will dishearten you. But if you're preaching, you'll be enlightened. And they actually started going and organizing the program, and then the preaching happened and they saw thousands of people coming. They all became enlightened. So sometimes when we're too much down in the dumps, just start doing something. Just get into the action. Because tamoguna perpetuates tamoguna. That means if I'm tamoguna, if I'm feeling like in tamoguna and I act also in tamoguna, then the feelings and actions, they become like a vicious cycle. But even if I'm tamoguna, I act like, at least if I'm rajoguna, I'll run around, I'll do this, I don't feel like it, but I do that. And what happens? From the tamoguna, we come out towards rajoguna. And if I associate with devotees, rajoguna will come towards tamoguna also. So basically preparing in advance and committing ourselves to some service by which drags us out of our modes that can help us to overcome these low phases in our spiritual life. So, one last question. So you talked about theophobia, but does it apply to the worship of Narasimhadev? Sometimes we worship Lord Narasimhadev out of the desire for protection, but I've also heard that if we commit offenses to Narasimhadev, we can get very severe reactions. So, I want to worship Narasimhadev, but I also feel afraid. So, what should I do? So, I did say that if you worship Narasimhadev with Prahlad, then there is no offense. But still, if I worship Narasimhadev, something goes wrong, then I feel, is it because I did an offense to Narasimhadev? That's because it has gone wrong. So, should I worship Narasimhadev, or is it by worshiping Narasimhadev, problems can become worse? But see, we have to first of all know that Krishna is not a fault-finding God. So, Krishna is not, when we talk about offense, the basic point is not that, like sometimes, if you are working on a computer, you write a very good article, but the spell check in the computer, the spell check doesn't check any of the things you're good, it just points out, this was a mistake. So, Krishna is not like that. And you did so many things right, you just did one thing wrong. So, if we are trying to serve Krishna, if we are attracted to any form of Krishna, that is auspicious. If we are attracted to Narasimhadev, that is wonderful. And usually, the question of offense primarily comes when we are worshipping a deity form of Narasimhadev, where deity is installed properly. Then, that's why the spiritual masters usually will not give us permission to install deities of Narasimhadev. Because for that, there it is, we are specially invoking the Lord's presence and we are promising the Lord that we will serve him. And then if it is an impropriety of service, it's a problem. But otherwise, the Lord is merciful, he's accommodating. And Prabhupada had Narasimha Aarti started in our temples and Narasimha children started, even when devotees were very new. But then many of them, practically at that time, there was hardly, if I'm not mistaken, there was very, very few devotees were Brahman initiated. And Narasimha, if you have photo, we can worship the Narasimhadev photo even without any, without Brahman initiation also. So the point is that any way we can connect with Krishna, that is favorable. In a kind of prakara, mana Krishna initiation. So if Narasimhadev is worshipped and inspires us, well, yes, most pictures of Narasimhadev do have Prahlad, and that is good. But the important point is if we are making a commitment to serve in a particular way, say if we are installing a deity, then one has to be very careful with worshipping Narasimhadev, installing it. But overall, the Lord is always merciful. And if we feel inspired to worship him, we should worship him. And it is not that we should not be trying to imagine things. Okay, this problem has come. Is it sometimes some devotees say, I'm going to my job and my car breaks down. So is it because I didn't chant Hare Krishna attentively in the morning, so my car broke down? Now don't go into that kind of imagination. Krishna is not a vindictive God. It may happen that because I don't chant Hare Krishna, my mind is all disorganized. That's why when I do things, I make a mess of things. That's possible. It's not because I didn't chant Hare Krishna, so Krishna is punishing me for that by foolish things. But Krishna is not that kind of God. We should not, if problems come, we just try to deal with the problems in a realistic way. There's no need to imagine this problem has come because of that or this offense or that offense. We just focus on just striving to serve Krishna with the best capacity, and if Narasimha is actually people for us, that's wonderful. Thank you very much. The Prabhupada Ki.